Welcome back. This is Christina Wise, your host. In this episode, I interview my longtime friend, Eric Qualman, also known as Equalman. Eric's a big success. He's an entrepreneur of a multi-million dollar business. He's a number one best-selling author and motivational speaker. He's performed in 55 countries and reached over 35 million people in the last decade. He was voted the second most likable author in the world behind Harry Potter's J.K. Rowling. His work's been used by the National Guard to NBC Universal to NASA. We had a fun conversation. We talk about focus, a word I found incredibly difficult to stay true to during this crazy time we live in. Eric's latest book is called The Focus Project, where he reveals what he learned about the power of focus by focusing on one important thing each month for 12 months. He shares his secrets for staying focused, as well as the trials and tribulations. Mostly, that it's much harder than we think, even when being focused on being focused. So if, like me, you're having some trouble staying highly intentional and directional, you'll wish to listen in to Eric's big focus reveals. Please enjoy my conversation with Eric Qualman. Eric, welcome to the Wealthy Wealthy Podcast.
No, great to be here. Can't wait to share some of my wins and also some of the misses.
Yeah, this is going to be a fun conversation. So this is round two. You were actually on my podcast when I was really just first releasing it. So first, thank you. It's always really nice for those, you know, original ones that are willing to say yes before there's a big following. And you shared so much then, and we've become friends over the years. You're another fellow Austinite. So it's good to see you here.
No, it's great to be back, and congratulations. Just keeping it rolling and just creating that following. So I know you're helping so many people out. So thank you.
Well, today we're going to talk about, I see it's behind you too. So the focus.
Oh, awesome.
And I love it. I've got my annotations and my thing in here. So it's just such a fun read. So thank you. And I really just want to delve into this book. But before we do that, for everybody listening, just share a little bit of story, like your background, how you got started, which is a really cool story, and how that rippled. And you've spoken, what, in over 55 countries and probably thousands of stages and some of the biggest audiences in the world. And so, yeah, just share, who's Eric Qualman or Equalman?
Yeah, no, I grew up outside of Detroit, and I got into the automotive business like most folks. But what I liked about it is I liked the digital side. And this is back when digital, there's very few people working on digital. So in my internship, just to show how very few people, I actually helped program the first Cadillac.com website as an intern. And so you fast forward, my whole background's been digital. I worked at Yahoo back when they were a small startup. They were kind of the Facebook of the day. And then worked for Travelzoo, head of marketing. Also worked at a big company like AT&T, helping with their online digital orders. That at that point, like how to get additional landline in your house because everyone needed an internet connection. That was back on dial-up. So it's been a great journey. But about 11 years ago, I was the head of marketing at Travelzoo. We took that company public. It became the top performing stock on the NASDAQ, actually. We took the company public, but MySpace was kind of big. And I could see this change in how we communicated. And I was going, let's get on Facebook, actually. And then got in arguments within the company about, why don't we go on MySpace? It's bigger. I'm like, well, Facebook should be bigger because of blah, blah, blah. Long story longer, I wrote a book called Socialnomics because I go, how can people not see that this isn't just for teenagers? This is going to change politics. It's going to change the way we communicate. So I wrote that book. And as I say, the rest is history. So now I've written, I guess, 6 books, and we've now performed in 55 countries. We've reached 50 million people. And my whole goal in life is to have fun and to help people, or to entertain, educate, and empower people to the best life so they can inspire others to do the same. So I primarily write books. We have an animation studio, so we produce some videos that some people have seen because some of them have gone quite viral. But that's what we do. We try to entertain, educate, empower people to their best life. And thanks for getting the latest book on focus. And so that's the short version of the story.
Yeah, and I know a lot of your work has really been on the digital world and even the footprint. I mean, I think the last podcast we talked about was to really be aware of the digital footprint that you're leaving, because, you know, what stays in Vegas now is on Facebook, and or what, you know, what happens in Vegas is now on Facebook. And, you know, that was in the time that things were really shifting. It's like, oh yeah, I am leaving a footprint. But that, you know, you really focused in that digital world and had those conversations. Where'd this focus book come from?
So the focus book came from, because in my mind, so I love technology. But technology changes every second, but human nature never does. So I'm always face-to-face, can't replace it. Obviously, we're living through challenging times where we've gone almost all Jetsons. But I'm more of a Flintstones first guy and then layer in the Jetsons capability when time and distance are an issue, which we're doing right now, right? Because we could physically be together. It'd be a different experience. And so where the Focus Project came out of was, like a lot of people, I'd had some success, but I was, at the end of the day, my hair, my pillow would catch on fire because my hair was on fire. I'm like, what was that? I go, tomorrow, it's going to be different. Not going to do that again. Then tomorrow was the same. The next day was the same. I go, this is crazy because I somewhat have more control over my time than, say, others because I own the company. But then I realized, as I talked to a CEO here, a stay-at-home dad here, a school teacher there, that everyone was wrestling with it. Just, and so then I paused and said, how great would it be if I just took on a project where for each month I just focused on the thing that mattered most? And so that's what I did. As I had a year of false starts because this is so hard to do. And then I finally was able to do it for those 12 months. Each month, just focus on one thing, primarily with the end result being what works and what doesn't work. And everyone's different. So I say we're all living the same movie, but we're different actors and different actresses. And so it's really about, here's what worked for me. Here's what didn't work. Here's what the science shows. And kind of giving it to people so that they can take it and go, yes, I'm trying to do too much. I can't do it all. I can have it all, but I can't do it all at once. And so that's what the whole purpose of the book was, is the not so simple art of doing less better.
I love that. And it's, you know, it is a message that's been there for a while. We know what, you know, Gary Keller and Jay Papasan had the One Thing book, and then there's the Essentialism book, and I always called it the fuck book, which was Mark Manson's The Art of Not Giving Enough. And, you know, so some of these have been out here, but what I loved about your book is you really did break it down. Like, hey, this was the focus this month, and this is what I learned, and this is what I studied, and this is how it, where I succeeded and where I failed. And so first of all, how was this experience for you?
Yeah, no, great question. So I actually gave myself a grade each month. And so one big learning was that you've got to go for progress over perfection. And so I only have, out of the 12 months, two A's. Fortunately, one of them was the first month, but I got two A's. And so you have C's, you have C pluses, you have B's. And so, like, for mindfulness, I have a tough time. I know how good it is to meditate. I know how good it is to journal. But somehow that always slips in terms of time, or I can't get my brain to kind of quiet down. But I didn't give myself enough. I did better at it. And so I took some takeaways. Okay, I can do that. And then some months I go, okay, that's not sustainable. It's not possible. And being okay with that. That was like a big takeaway, is just, again, that progress versus perfection. I think that's helped out a lot of people that are reading the book to understand that, look, you got to cut stuff out. And by doing that, you're going to do the big things much better. Like you said, Gary Keller, Jay Papasan with their book, The One Thing, or we list all those books in the book, actually, Greg's book, Essentialism. And so it's tested like Essentialism. Does it work? Or is it just good to read? You know?
Right.
And so I wanted to test, like, what's really realistic, or like these miracle mornings or something. It's like, dude, I'm not going to do 10 things before in an hour. It's just not possible with my kids. It's not happening. So what's plausible?
I love it. Well, let's break it down a little bit. So I think one of your A's was growth, but how do you think about growth? What does growth mean to you?
Yeah, in this particular instance, so I tell people, if you're going to take on your own focus project, which I want you to do, and all that means is that you're going to carve out, let's say, a half hour a day for that month to focus on that thing. It can be one of the most rewarding months was to organize physical stuff, right? Because it's just, I love it because you put in the time, you can see the result. And that's why, and it also makes you more productive being organized. That's why there's all these bestsellers out there about how to organize your life. And so that was one of my favorite months. I knew it would be. But the growth month is a month that I say, if you're going to do the focus project, you've got to nail the thing that will allow you to allocate this time. So for us, it was, hey, we've got to crush me speaking on stage, obviously pre-COVID. So these are live events. And so that's when I thought of growth, it's like, I want to do that month because I can measure it. And also too, it'll allow me the flexibility, if we crush that month, to kind of have this time to do that. So that's why I picked that particular piece in terms of growth. It was sales of getting me on stage to speak. And now it sounds crazy. That's always been our top revenue generator. But I would start to track. Again, I did a year where I failed at false starts, I call them. I couldn't do it. And I'd literally look at the month and go, I'm supposed to be allocating a half hour a day or 2 hours, eventually 2 hours a day to this. I allocated 17 minutes for the month. This is the top thing. And so once we did get it started, the good thing is we crushed it that month by focusing 2 hours, focusing the team, focusing my time just around that piece. And it sounds so simple. Like, why weren't you doing that before? It's because we get pulled by all the things, right? You get pulled by all these immediate things and you push away the one thing that you think can wait, but it's the most important piece. And so that's why I took it on, because we could measure it. And also too, it was the most important thing to allow us the grace to do it for the rest of the year.
Yeah. What I love about that also, I mean, I find myself as any, especially small business owner, entrepreneur, there's never any shortage of things that seem like they're important and great ideas and different projects. And, you know, I find myself that I really spread not just myself too thin, but I spread my team too thin. So I'm an innovator. I'm a visionary. There's just so much to do and create. Yeah. And, you know, so I love that it's just not you, like myself too. It's like, what's that one thing that we're going to grow? Because I'm trying to grow everything at once. And it just doesn't talk about fail. It's just tired at the end of the day. But I also love what you said. The team was rallying that same focus. I think that's equally important, that it's not just you trying to work on, you know, these measurable results and what you, you know, your part to it, but what is we as a team? This is our primary focus for this month.
No, you're spot on. I sat down with the author of the Shark Tank book. So he gets a behind the scenes look at all these entrepreneurs and all the sharks themselves. And I asked him, like, what's the top thing you've taken away from the two books you've written? And he goes, really, it's all of them get back to don't drown in the sea of opportunity. So exactly your point with the team is you got to get the team focused, that true north. And it's easier said than done. Again, my habit in default, I slide back into it sometimes, because that's why I actually reread the book when I'm having a bad day, because that's why I wrote it for one person, right? I could always go back to that research. Is that, especially when I was traveling, I'd just come in, we'd have a status meeting on Monday, and I'd just kind of blow through it or would push it off. I was like, oh, we could push that off. But now that's the main, we don't push that off. That's the main meeting for the week. It's like, all right, what's your main focus for the week? And then we're going to check back in on Friday, not to hold you accountable, but just so that reminds you, what are you doing? And is anything holding you up? So like, what are you doing? Is there any blocks in the way that we can help remove? And if you don't do that, they're working on what they think's important and it might not be important for the whole organization.
And that was some of the you know, the biggest leaders in the world that are, you know, leading the biggest, most successful companies. Do you find that these CEOs, this is what they're really good at, is this focus, is kind of this one thing that, and they drive the team for towards the one thing, even though they've, I mean, talk about massive opportunities and projects.
You know, it's a great question, because part of the reason, going back to one of your first questions, was where did this idea come from? Is I was in a room. So I gave a speech on stage in front of all the companies that make the candy. If you think of Halloween, like everyone, every piece of candy that's in your Halloween basket, everyone was in this room at this cocktail reception. And so people's last names are Mars. You know, they live on streets like Hershey. And so I'm always just a sponge. So I ask them, you know, you're successful. Your family's been successful for hundreds of years. How do you do it? And they like, focus. And I go, what's your biggest challenge each and every day? And they go, staying focused. And so they're slightly better than most. And a big learning from the book is they're not more talented. They're not more educated. What they do is they have better systems. And so these highly successful people, the way they can focus, the way they win is by focus. So that's why they win. And then how do they focus? They have systems. They don't rely on willpower. They have better systems and routines. So they have systems around saying no. They say no to almost everything. And so that's one of the key learnings of the book.
Yeah, that was big in there. And, you know, McCowan talks about that in Essentialism too. It's kind of the art of saying no. So how do you do that? Did you find that when you're going through this, you were saying yes to too many things, and this was a new practice to get better at saying no?
I've gotten much better at saying no. It's still not easy, but you got to get a system in place that defaults to no. So your immediate, just get in the mindset of no. So it might be as simple as if you're doing takeout food today, they go, hey, do you want pepper on this? Just say no. I know it's weird, but it's just like getting the habit of saying no. Because most of us are people pleasers, and that serves us well. Like going back thousands of years, you want to assimilate to the tribe. You want to mirror people, and you want to be a people pleaser. But you're not pleasing anybody if you say yes to everything, because you're basically saying no to everything if you say yes to everything. So everyone's going to lose. So that's a framework that's helped me to know that my no's a no, and but that makes my yes a yes. And the easiest way to think about it is, unless it's an emphatic yes. So when you ask, hey, do you want to be a guest? That's an emphatic yes. Do you want Super Bowl tickets? Emphatic yes. If you're thinking, I probably should do that, that's a no. Like before, I'd say yes, because I probably should do that because X, Y, Z. I probably should do that because it might help. But then the day comes, you don't want to do that. And so if you say yes to things, you're basically saying no to opportunities in the future. And so all the top successful people understand, I've got to say no today because that allows me to say yes tomorrow. So it should be, if it's not an emphatic yes, it should be an emphatic no with like some sprinkles, so it doesn't hurt so much. But it should be sharp, like, hey, my default is I'm heads down on this book project. So no, and I used to say like maybe in a couple of months, I'm like, if I know it's a no, it's like, hey, I'd love to. This is a great opportunity. Thanks for reaching out. But it's going to be a no because I'm heads down on my book.
Yeah. And that's okay. That's okay. Yeah. I get it. One of these that I really liked was the focusing on relationships. So tell me about that, your project to focus on relationships, and really the before and after. Did you notice like, whoa, I'm not really focusing on relationships, and now that I am, this is the change or the difference?
Yeah. Cause I think a lot of us, especially now, like you say, you're working from home, it's a virtual world. It's that you don't have those kind of day-tight compartments, as a Dale Carnegie would say. You don't have those fine lines that are set up in place. And so that helped me a lot, is that when I'm present, I'm present, so that I'm not thinking about something else. And that's with the kids, there's dedicated time. We're going to read from this time to this time. And so it's just like there's nothing else that you're doing. You're not trying to answer stuff on your phone while you're doing that. It's just like when you're there, you're there. And that has a lot of positive health ramifications as well. But it's really about focusing on those relationships. And sometimes it sounds crazy, but you almost need to write down on paper there's an old rule of thumb. You can only have a relationship with like 150 people, deep people, but they're trying to figure out that's true, like from a digital world standpoint. But I think it's true from a core deep relationships. And so kind of figure out what are those relationships that are really deep. Otherwise everything becomes kind of a surface level relationship. So that was really helpful for me to be able to do that. Sometimes you have to like write down, and it's sad because then you're not writing down a name. It makes you feel bad, but it helps you deepen that relationship with those other people.
Yeah. And in the book, you're even telling a story that one of your projects was swimming. And so that you were getting into that and invited the kids, that the girls, it'd be a really nice time to swim. Then you find yourself irritated. Like, wait a second, this is getting in the way of X, Y, or Z. And then if you don't mind telling that story, but then it's like, no, wait, this is actually a really great time to be present and to enjoy this time.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was, thanks for bringing that up. But yeah, I was training for a triathlon. So you have to swim the first leg of that event. And so you're in the pool, and it's a small enough pool where I'm training. It's long enough, but it's narrow. So I can actually see the kids, so I can see that they're okay. So I can watch them while I'm swimming, and they're having fun. I'm having fun. But obviously they want to interact with daddy. So they're diving under, they're grabbing my legs, they're kicking me in places I don't want to be kicked as I swim off. And you're like, hey, I gotta focus, you know, I gotta get this, I gotta rock this thing out, I gotta go in do well in the triathlon. And then it dawned on me, hey, no, this is the most important thing, this relationship. You know, I'm not going for a gold medal here. So it's like that day is gonna go when they're not gonna want to be in your lane. And so I talk about sometimes you want people to cross over into your lanes in life. It's kind of a metaphor. And then you enjoy that time, because that time is kind of fleeting. And remind yourself, what is the most important thing and what's more important than relationships? And so it's really about taking advantage of that time. And then so that became more of a win. And it actually makes you, if you're diving after them and you're trying to concentrate, it makes you stronger in the race. Because anyone that's done a triathlon, you get kicked in the face, people are all over you. You're not having this pure, perfect lane. And that's why I think a lot of us run into problems. I know it ran in for me, is I wake up in the morning thinking, all right, here comes this perfect swimming lane. I've got this plan. And as Mike Tyson says, everyone has a plan until you get punched in the face. And so all of a sudden that day, there's no perfect swimming lane. It's never happened during the day. And so it's really about realizing that's a beautiful thing, that that's what life's all about, these challenges and moving around and weaving and then hugging those obstacles or that come in your way somewhat, like if you think about the kids and those relationships. So all of a sudden, metaphorically, it's like, yeah, you're going to not have a perfect swimming lane. Two, during your life, you're going to swim into others' lanes. Others are going to swim into yours. And also, two, you got to understand at some point, if someone's in your lane for a long time and they're not helping you, you need to change lanes. Like, you have that choice. You need to change lanes. Or think about life. You have the remote control. We forget that we have the remote control to change the channel.
Wow, that's so good. Something else that when I'm listening to you, it makes me think of as well, is that how many times do we get so intent and focused on the outcome that we're really missing the juiciness of the experience itself, the training with the kids grabbing on you and the laughter and them being silly. And, you know, you're doing the race anyway, but we miss those real moments that the training really is the fun piece, like, you know, and then the race is just like, all right, go race and check that off the box. But I find that especially for us type A entrepreneurs, we're just so focused on the goal that we almost get pissed off if anything's in the way, as opposed to having a playful spirit of like, all right, let's see what this is today.
No, you're right. I mean, it's like if you're writing a book, it is if you've had Matthew McConaughey on the show, because he's obviously an Austinite, like there's joy and there's happiness. A lot of people derive happiness from the outcome, but really you want to focus on joy, which is the pure joy of writing something, that you enjoy the process. It doesn't matter if anyone reads it. It's just, did you derive joy from the process? And that's when you produce your best work as well, whether it's in business, whether it's in arts, whatever it is. It's really trying to get back to easier said than done. Again, I always say what we talk about, the learnings I got from this project, simple, but not easy. Mm-hmm. And so it's stuff that we know, just like if you want to get in better shape, you know, eat better, exercise more, simple, but not easy to execute on. So that's why you kind of need those systems in place and those items that will get you back to ground zero.
And I like what you did here, even breaking it up like one focus a month and the way you did this, because I've thought about this with a lot of the books like yours, and it brought it, you know, when I read yours, it reminded me of this, of, it really seems like, shouldn't it be the easiest thing in the world to focus on one thing? It's just one thing. Like, then we can just not even worry about everything. I mean, you kind of worry about everything else, but, you know, but it's the hardest thing in the world to worry about, just focus on one thing. Like, and it's not just for me too. I get very focused and I have an objective. Let's say I signed up for a new programmer course and I'm so excited and it starts, but then I get in the habit of every, you know, just the normal life takes over. And I even forgot that that was the focus in the first place. And, you know, I spent a few $1,000s on that thing. So was there anything that just, I mean, outside of that you were doing this and writing a book about it and challenging yourself, was there anything that really kept you on focus? Like, what are those systems? Was it just like hell bent? Like, I am going to train myself to stay focused on this.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's funny because I'm in the process of doing the focus project, in the process of writing the book, and still I couldn't focus on certain things. Like that day would happen where it explode. And so I wrote in that focus is hard, really, really, really hard. And so it's giving yourself that grace, first of all, and knowing if that day got away from you, just don't have a couple days in a row repeat like that. And so that's the key, is don't let that chain get broken, because you get that momentum. All of us like momentum. And if you let a couple days slide, it's just like if you're going to the gym, it's like when you're in that momentum, it's like, I missed today, but I get back tomorrow. But then if you miss a couple days, you're like, whatever, I'm not going to the gym anyways, might as well eat this chocolate. And all of a sudden you start going on that wrong path. And so systems, here's a couple systems. One, I ate the same breakfast every day for a year. Same breakfast. I didn't have to think about it. It was an egg white frittata. You just pour in the egg whites. Very easy to make. You flip it over. It's done. The other thing is it's super easy to clean. And it's got a green smoothie on the side. Again, super easy to clean. And then it's just like some lean turkey meat. And then so at least I had one healthy meal to start the day. But most importantly, I didn't have to think about it. It was automatic. Automatic shirt. Like Steve Jobs started this. I started wearing a gray shirt many, many years ago before Zuckerberg did, but Zuckerberg does the same thing, CEO of Facebook. It's just, you don't want to, it's called brain fatigue. You have decision fatigue. And so that allows you to kind of, it's one less decision you have to make. Breakfast, one less decision. What am I wearing? And so there you go. And so those are some of the systems that I put in place that helped me a lot, still help me today.
All right. So let's talk about, I really love the declutter piece. I'm all about minimalism, thing in its place, and still it's just so easy for things to pile up and then it starts to fill the load of that. But tell me about that. What was that experience? What did you notice and how did you feel once this project was complete?
Yeah. I mean, it's never done, but it's always rewarding to, I don't hoard stuff by nature, but stuff accumulates and it gets unorganized through the course of the day. The day gets crazy, right? You don't know what's going to happen. The day blows up and things are unorganized. But I always love it, and it's shown in the research that most of us work better if things are organized. And it also gives you some quick wins. So if you ever need a quick win, it's just set the clock for 15 minutes and do it. Others argue you got to take the whole day and just crush your closet. Whatever works for you. That's what I say in the book. Figure out what works for you. The science will show both, but figure out what works for you. But it was very rewarding to get in there. And then you have to have systems there too, because you go in your closet and also you're like, I might wear this. You got to have a system. So the system was, if I haven't worn it in 12 months, that's an automatic donate to charity. This thing has had its time. This shirt has had its time. These pants, it's now time for someone else. So that helped me as well by donating it. A small business, you can write this off too, so that's helpful. So you don't have to sell it, but it's just donation. So that was a system I had. Otherwise, you'd sit there and lament. You'd spend all day in your closet, like debating back and forth. It's like, I haven't worn that in a year, so boom, it's done. And then you all know it because you have like your favorite shirt and you have this okay shirt. You're always going to go to the favorite shirt. So it's a little easier. It's a little easier for me to wear a gray shirt. It's not easy for, depending on what your role is and what you do, to wear the same thing every day. But if you have your favorite shirt, you're always going to default to that. So you might as well get a couple of them just as backup anyways.
And how did you feel when you really went through this whole project, that focus project for that month? Was there a noticeable difference of you felt better?
Yeah, no, it's just, the gravitational pull is to go back to what you've been doing for your whole life. So again, I fall into that too. I reference the book a lot to this every day. If I'm struggling, I kind of go back and flip through it. What do we do right? What do we do wrong? How do we get better? So definitely getting much better at just being relaxed about the big things. One, focus on the big things. That also gives you perspective to kind of just relax.
So I think we're, so many of us, myself included, struggle. I mean, I love, again, you can have broke these up in these 12 projects per year and focused on the one thing. Life is obviously so many concerns at once. And so you're a husband and then there's that focus, and you're a dad, so there's that focus. You're a business owner and entrepreneur, so there's that focus. You're an employer, so there's that focus. You have these clients and all these, people around the world that are clamoring for you and your teacher, you. And then you're an author, and so there's the time. I mean, authorship, you have to sit there and actually focus. So in all of this, was it by virtue of like focusing on just one thing at a time in these different categories, open up more space for everything so that you, I don't like the word balance, but things felt more in balance maybe versus maybe just chaotic and everything's kind of out and you're kind of running from one thing to another and putting one fire out or trying to keep wife happy while clients are over here. Did it, through this work, did you just feel more organized and structured and ultimately more balanced? Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah, it does. It works. But again, I'm going to repeat this 100 times so that it's got to sink in for everyone, that you're striving for progress, not perfection. So it was better than before. And it's still better than before today as I keep, you have to be mindful of it each day because that's how tricky this stuff is. And so you mentioned the word balance, and I know we've talked before, it's really about harmony. So since we talked about the swimming lanes, that's harmonious, right? You're combining two things. I need to train for the triathlon. I need to spend time with the kids. Boom, win-win, right? Before you get frustrated and say, I got to keep these separate, and that's harmonious. Now, there are instances where you don't want harmony, meaning that you got to block off time. Like the one thing, they call it time blocking. I call it in the book, acting like a cowgirl or a cowboy. You've got to fence off specific times for yourself and then keep wide open spaces. If you looked at my calendar, it was jammed to the gills. I'm sure yours is or was as well. And so you got to fence off specific time for certain things, read with the girls, or I'm going to exercise. Like that's non-negotiable. Like what are your non-negotiables? And then fence those off. And then don't fill in every other crack on that schedule. Try to keep it wide open. One thing we covered in the book, Warren Buffett, it's funny, if you flip through his calendar, it's almost completely empty. And it's paper, right? It's a paper calendar. And he's taught even Bill Gates this. Gates had his calendar. He thought a good CEO has it morning to noon, all meetings. And Buffett's even taught him this, that it's like, no, it's this is what you need to do to keep it open. We call it cowboy and cowgirl scheduling. Another great thing that we learned, it's a good story, is that Buffett was talking with his pilot, Mike Flint, and he goes, all right, Mike, I want you to do this exercise. I want you to write down your top, you know, two things you need to do. And then he goes, and I want you to write down the top 18 things you want to do, the rest of the 18. And he goes, all right, I did it. And he goes, all right, now what are you going to do? And he goes, well, I'm going to focus on these two things. And when time allows, I'm going to get to these other 18 things. And he goes, no. You're going to throw that other 18 thing list away or keep it in the drawer. You're only going to focus on these two things. And if you get one of these done, then you can move one over. And so that's why we came up with the idea of the not to-do list. And so the practical thing that everyone listening here today can do is look at your to-do list. 90% of people make to-do lists. Only 4% of people make not to-do lists. But successful digital leaders index very high on making not to-do lists. And so look at your to-do list and just write the word not. It's going to give you a heart attack to do this, but just write not at the top. And then go down there and just select that one thing. Look through all of it and just highlight one and move it over. That's your to-do list. And so easier said than done. You're going to have heart palpitations just thinking about writing that word not on the top of your to-do list, but you still have it there. It's just your not to-do list. And once you get that to-do thing done, then move that other item over.
I like that. So how much did you find is you're focused on one thing again? Did you notice maybe where you're wasting time in other areas that really weren't productive and were out of focus? And even if they were, even the not to do wasn't getting any attention because, I don't know, social media, or like where were the distractions in all this?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. And it was one where I didn't have a ton of fat. Like I'm not a big TV watcher. Even though I write Socialnomics, occasionally I can get sucked into social media, but not too often. So it wasn't, when I write the book, I said, look, I know you're not just sitting on your couch. Like you're successful. You people reading this, you're having success. But just like a CEO or someone else or a school teacher or stay-at-home dad, is that at the end of the day, you're exhausted and you felt like you're running 100 miles per hour and didn't get anywhere. And so it wasn't necessarily I was wasting time. I was being wasteful with my time. And the big difference is wasteful, meaning I was doing little things that mattered, but they weren't the big picture things. So that if a day or two slipped by where I wasn't writing the book, that's a big picture item that I need to get done. And so you can't have too many of those days. And it happened during the Focus Project where I wouldn't write a word, which is a big no-no. And so that's where we got better at what are the little things that are pulling at us that are immediate, to where you're getting better at saying, hold on, that's not a house on fire. I don't have to go put it out. That's important. It's a little thing, but it's not as important as this other thing that I've written down over here. So as soon as I get this done, then I can go over and do that. I call it playing with house money. You've got to do it in the morning for a lot of reasons. One, you got that brain drain. Two, you got to attack the day before it attacks you, essentially. And so now I'm going to flip the script. I'm going to ask you a question, because what was really fascinating to me is that all of us are one of three birds. So we're either a robin, you get up super early, you're a morning person, you're getting that catch the worm, you know. The early bird gets the worm. There's eagles. Those are kind of tweeners, and most of us are eagles. Or you're a night owl. And so you're not completely out of luck if you're a night owl. It's just that your morning might start later. And most of us are most efficient basically an hour after we normally would naturally wake up. So, and I'll see if this holds true for you. So if you were to go to bed, let's say on a Friday, you have nothing planned for Saturday. So there's no reason, you don't have to get up for any reason. Like what time would you normally go to bed? What time would you normally get up?
I'm pretty consistent. 10:30 to 6:30, plus or minus an hour.
Got it. So you're a robin like I am. It's about, you're almost on the same schedule that I am. Anyone that gets up before seven is a robin. Most of us are eagles. That's 7 to 10. If you naturally get up after 10, then you're a night owl. But essentially, and I don't know if this holds true, you can say no, feel free. Is it an hour after you get, say 6:30? So 7:30, 8-ish is probably when you're at your optimum. That's when you might write. That's when you might do that big thing. I don't know if that holds true for you. Does that hold true?
It absolutely holds true. And that, I mean, that's just my brain. When I wake up, it's like time to go. And it's that creative energy and that all that energy is just ramping to get going. And then my brain turns off at 3 o'clock. Like if we're supposed to have a brainstorming session or a strategy session or a real important conversation, I mean, my body is present, but my mind is completely toast at that point. So, I mean, my brain actually has a stopping point.
No, that's great. And so, and you know that. So that's what we talk about in the book is you got to know thyself and know thy strengths and know thy weaknesses. And so that's why it's imperative to attack that item for you, 7:30, 8, you've got your coffee or your morning tea, whatever your ritual is. And you just got to do that. Attack the day before it attacks you. Now, interesting enough, most high-level top performers are robins. Now, that doesn't mean, like I said, most of us are eagles, but top performers, especially in the business world, are early risers. They've adjusted to that, partly because they understand there's less distractions. It's the only time they can get that quiet time. And so we put a list together even in the book. It's like 30. It ranges from Richard Branson to Mary Barra, the CEO of General Motors, all the way across to, Jeff Bezos, Amazon. Some of these people get up ridiculously early, like 4:35. But that was a common thread we saw as well. There's still top performers, especially in the creative world, that get up that are owls. So it's just knowing when your optimum time is and not wasting that on email, not wasting it on something that someone comes in and grabs you. Like you said, you've got your team. They come in and grab you. You got to be like, hey, that's important to me, but not right now because I got to get this thing done. Let me finish this.
Yeah, no, big shift for me too was those were some big shifts was not to check email first thing. And even the shift for me with my cell phone, not to just get right on the cell phone in the morning, like, nope, the phone is not going back on until like my meditation time, until like my day lined out to these few different things. Now I can turn all those notifications on. But I can't tell you, it's right now that's now it's pretty easy. But at the beginning, it was the hardest thing in the world not to check my phone. Like, oh my God, I'm missing. I mean, it's laughable almost. I couldn't do it. I could not do it. And that was a big shift. It's like, nope, nope, nope. And I finally learned like, wow, you know, the world's not going to, you know, my world's not going to fall apart just because I waited an extra hour to turn my phone on. You know, I could have been sleeping during that time and nobody have known any different.
Yeah, it's funny because if you go through a big life event, like say someone really close to you gets sick or gets in an accident, you have to go to the hospital. You're there for 2 days and that's all you're doing. Like your phone, there might be people saying, how's things going? But that's it. You realize the world moves on without you, which isn't a bad thing. It's like the world can still function without you. And so that's why you always get back to the big things. And so those life events also remind you, I got to do the big things. You know, what are the big things? And so that was just the epiphany there is that it's not easy, but it can be done.
So we're already like bumping up against our time together. It was so fast. What would be your, even I love at the beginning of the book, you have your list of kind of your epiphanies or what you call them,
Yeah, we had like the 15 top focus items. We had the 99 things from life that is good to know.
Yeah, but what were those eureka moments? Like once this project was complete, you wrote the book, and if you're sitting back reflecting, what really jumped out at you? Like what were these big, like, whoa, I just never would have realized that had I not done this?
Yeah, the top three things for me were just looking at that focus is really, really hard. Really hard. But it can become a habit. You got to treat it like a habit. And so you got to train yourself to do it. And so that's why I went over some of the things, whether it's you wear the same thing, whether it's where you eat, you know, the same thing for breakfast. It's really just getting in the habit each and every day, what works and doesn't work for you. And so that's why I wanted to be the guinea pig and test all these things. The street science, me testing, married up with the clinical research and the clinical science, and just giving it to everyone saying, here's a playbook to give it a try. And so that was important. The second thing was that successful people are more focused than other people. That's not an epiphany, but the epiphany was that they're not smarter. They're not from a different background. It doesn't matter where they're from or what they do or their intelligence level. The consistent thread they have is they have systems and routines. And that starts with saying no. Say no to almost everything. We call it acting like a doctor. A doctor wants to save everybody. They want to treat everyone, but there's laws in place that they don't do that because if they do it, they get tired. And then it's a problem for that patient because now they're making mistakes and it becomes a big issue. So you got to treat your time like a doctor and you got to treat your, I call my yeses as limited inventory. As someone that sells items online throughout my career, like e-commerce, there's a set amount of inventory. And once it's off the shelf, those yes, sorry, we're all a yes. We're all out of yes. And so that was huge. And then last but not least is you're just going for progress, not perfection. So give yourself a break. And when you take this stuff on, you know, Neil Armstrong got it right. You know, that's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. It all starts with small steps. Floss one tooth. You know, PJ Fogg, he did the research. Well, it's ridiculous. Who's going to floss one tooth? Exactly. Because motion creates momentum. So you do it. You go, might as well floss all these teeth. Or when I was having a tough time journaling, because I'd go, oh, I don't have 15 minutes to journal, so I'll do it later. And it didn't happen. But now it's like, just write one sentence. And usually it leads to more, but if not, at least I wrote just that one sentence. That was good enough. And so those are the top three learnings is that one, it can be learned. It's a habit. It's not easy. Two, that it's really about having systems and routines in place. And three, give yourself a break. You know, it's about progress, not perfection. And think big picture. When you wake up, go, did I take care of myself? Yes. Are my kids still alive? Yes. Okay, everything else is gravy. House money. Let's play with some house money.
I love it. All right. And it makes me think too that just clarity, focus gives clarity. It just gets through the blurriness of all the things that could be there. It's like, nope, focus, clear. This is what I'm working on. And then everything else comes second. And has anything changed during kind of this COVID time? I think I was having a conversation with a good friend of mine here recently. And I said, during this time, I've had more, you would think with kind of think maybe more space in a certain degree, it'd be easier to focus on other things. But I found myself quite the opposite is I'm having more trouble having clarity or focus and kind of just feel pulled in. In many cases, I've worked harder than I've ever worked, yet it doesn't feel like it's going anywhere. So it's almost this confusing time for me personally. That's what's really worked successfully. Historically, I'm off center. So what have you noticed? Are any of these principles factored in here?
Yeah, what we noticed is when it first started is that people had more time. So they didn't have more time, but they had the reception of more time because something went away that was filling that time. So they had to go in the traffic and they went to work in XYZ or they were going out every Friday night and all of a sudden they just have time, right? Because it's like there's these wide open spaces. And so what happened though is gravitational pull, they start to fill in that time, hopefully with good stuff, but most of it was like busy stuff. I say, don't be busy. If you ever say, hear yourself, and I catch myself even to this day, how are you doing? I'm busy. You don't want to ever answer that. like get in the mindset of I'm focused on the big, not the busy. And so we saw that people did have that time. Then all of a sudden they became, like you said, super busy. Cause all of a sudden, whoa, I got to adjust everything I've done. And now I got to adjust, like in our case, we're live events. All of a sudden it goes virtual. We're better than most because we have an animation studio. So we were prepared for it, let alone my friends that I'm talking to that don't do any of that, that all they did was live events. And so now they're running 100 miles an hour and don't feel like they're getting anywhere because they're trying to test stuff, what's going to work. So to your point, it's like, oh my gosh, I'm exhausted. And did I get anywhere? And now we're kind of in the, now we've kind of adjusted and we're kind of getting to the new norm and hopefully things change, but it won't go back to the way it was. That's for sure. In terms of like life will never be like it was before COVID. So it's about what does that new norm look like? And so now that we adjusted, that's why we pulled the book forward because so many people are asking, I need that because it's crazy. I can't focus. I don't know. There's a great article in the New York Times. You can homeschool your kids and you can work from home. You can be excellent, but you can't do them both at the same time. And so that was a big relief for people. And then now what do I do? And so that's why they asked for the book to hopefully figure out where do I fence off certain times? Where do I leave wide open spaces? And what are the big things I should be focused on and writing those down? And it was interesting. I know we're running out of time, but going back to the beginning of the project, I wrote down on a piece of paper, what got me excited? Man, I'd love to be good at golf. Like I've never focused on golf. And I'm writing all this stuff down. I get like 50. I cross down to 12. And then crazy enough, it cross matches with basically the top 12 failed resolutions that people do every year. Like, I want to get in better shape. And it's like, there it is on my list, health. And it's the top failed resolutions. And then all of a sudden I looked at what are the top 10 selling books of all time. Oh, guess what? It cross marries to that. And so that's why I say we're all living the same movie or different actors and actresses. When you see that data wise, how that lines up, that my list handwritten down lines up with the top resolutions, which lines up with the top failed resolutions, which lines up with the top selling books of all time.
That's amazing. Wow. 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 All right. To wrap this up, thank you. And I always love talking to you and love our conversations. We'll make this a little bit about Eric now. So if I said, or if you said, Christina, if you really, really knew me, you would know that. What's something about Eric Hallman that most people don't know because we just see the professional you?
Let's see, that don't know. Yeah, it's interesting. I guess this is an interesting story that most people probably wouldn't know. And my girls were the other day going, why are your teeth like a different color? Like, why are they brown down here? You can't see them, but they're not brown. They're just not the same color as my other teeth because they're fake teeth. And like my dream growing up was to play college basketball. And I got cut from our high school team as a junior. So like you think that dream dies, but no, it's still there. And I went to college. Became a manager at Michigan State University, which is kind of a water boy. And then I kept thinking, man, I still want to play. And I could see what it took to play. So I was working out afterwards, trying. And then junior year, there's a bunch of people sick and injured. So this would happen maybe once or twice a year where they didn't have players. And they go, hey, Kwame, we need you to play today, like in practice. I go, this is my moment. Like I put on like 35 pounds. I've like been working out, grew a couple inches, and I'm doing amazing. Like, this is the time. I go, yep, they're going to go, this guy needs to be on the team. And then I took an elbow, like just an errant elbow to the face, and I was born with two teeth missing, so I already had a fake tooth to make up for that gap. And so when I got hit, I was like, oh, and I could feel it was teeth, but I thought it was a tooth. I thought it was a fake one. So I like kind of just threw it down to the side and kept playing because I didn't want to lose my momentum and lose my opportunity. And then about 20 minutes, there's a timeout and the trainer's like, look at him. You can see there's blood coming out of my side of my mouth and I'm trying to hide it. And then he goes, hey, there's you like missing three teeth. Like there's two real teeth that are missing in there. We found them over here by the bench. You got to go to the dentist right now. So I'm sitting there on the whole ride. Now it's really hurting, but I'm going, man, I can't believe this happened to me. But Coach Izzo, Hall of Famer, he built the whole program on grit and grind. And so I didn't realize it till the next year when I did walk on, make the team, get a scholarship. that probably was the main reason I was able to do that. Because there might have been players the same skill, but he just knew I had that grit to keep going. And so looking back, that I've always used that in my life to remind myself when something bad happens, I go, I can't see it, but I know this is happening for me. And this is really timely right now because there's been days for a while there, I'd go to my wife, we'd kind of joke to each other. She works with the business as well. Do you want the bad news or the really bad news first? And then we started to realize, wait, we're so blessed that we're healthy during this very challenging time. So it's all that perspective and knowing that there's innovation that's going to come out of this time that's going to help us. We're starting to see it now. And so it's reminding ourselves, we don't know why we're going through this season, but it's things happen for you, not to you.
I love that. Thank you. What a great story. And all right. So next question is, tell me a brag moment. What's something you're really, really proud of?
Oh man, that's a good one. Well, I'm proud of my daughters, you know, they're just amazing. So I always try to, I even write this in the book. I'm still trying to live up to the coffee mug they gave me with the nail polish that's still sticky to this day that says world's greatest dad. So always trying to live up to that. In terms of other moments, like there's just been some surreal moments to where like I met the president of the United States. It doesn't matter what politics you are. My parents are like, why'd you meet with him? I'm like, he's a president. Like it was with President Obama and he's a big basketball guy. So I made him laugh pretty hard because everyone's saying the same thing to him. And I could see we're going to kind of align up based on where we were standing in the room. And so that was kind of a good moment, but there's little things too, like NASA used our work. So anything that just helps people, the National Guard, FBI, just some crazy moments that have really just looking out there and helping someone just be better.
That's one thing I love about you. I mean, you've had these mad successes and you're just so humble and real and you're just here to help people. And I've just always really admired that about you. And so tell me like just a big abysmal failure where you're looking back and just saying, what was I thinking? That was horrible.
Oh man, there's a lot to draw from. I think that one of the most challenging times is that during the reset, if everyone remembers Bernie Madoff, that whole Ponzi scheme, there's actually a bunch of smaller Ponzi schemes like that that had happened during that time. And so I had invested some of my best friends to this day, and it was good because they're still my best friends. So I realized that money, for me, it's not as important as a friendship. And it also, the buck always stops at you. And so I invested these folks, they're today like some big CFOs at big companies. So they know finances inside and out. And they, like the Bernie Madoff, they were roped into this thing. And so I was like, oh man, this is great. I can't believe we're getting this return. And then I start questioning, because I'm not a finance guy. I go, well, I don't understand why they could give us like 15%. Why wouldn't they get it from the bank? Oh, because of X, Y, and Z. And I go, okay, that makes sense. And then finally I go, I don't know, this doesn't smell right. Like my dad says, it's too good to be true. It probably is. So I'm like, let's get it out. But I couldn't get it out because it was too late in the game. And so all these people, including me, lost all that money. And for us, it was like a huge amount of money. It was like our almost entire nest egg. And here we are about to start our small business. We're about to have our first child. And layer on top of that, I go to the doctor and the doctor comes out and she's crying because it's been diagnosed that I have lymphoma, like cancer. I'm like, this isn't good. Like if the doctor's crying. And then fortunately later that week I was living in Cambridge. So we went to the Harvard's medical center and this guy comes out and he goes, hey, there's a lot of false positives on this. I'm pretty sure that's what it is for you. We're gonna have to take blood tests for a year with you. But I mean, I don't want to give you the wrong sense, but I'm almost positive that this is a false positive based on what I'm reading here. So anyways, that day, before that week, before I went to see that doctor, that whole week was just like, oh boy. But we still started the business. And that's why I tell entrepreneurs, I go, we could have not started at a worse time. So the best time to start was yesterday. The second best time to start is today. I know it firsthand. We started at the worst possible time and it all worked out.
I love that. Thank you. Well, one final question to do a little myth busting. Is there a big fat myth you'd like to bust from your point of view? Something that you just see, you're like, what? I just want to shatter that one.
Yeah, this one will be controversial, but one that pops to mind is I've been talking about online voting for years. And now we're almost being forced into it. And so the myth, I always have this sheet I don't have in front of me, but I write down, I usually go, hey, it's insecure. It can be manipulated. Boom, boom, boom. There's a lot of good reasons. And I flip that over. I go, those are the exact same reasons that were listed for why people would never, never, ever give their credit card online to buy something on something like Amazon. So back in the 90s, are the exact same reasons. So the question's not if we're going to go to online voting. The question's when. It gets me excited because everyone goes to the presidential race. But what really it is exciting at the local level. Because it'll say, hey, weren't aware of this because 95% of you don't vote at the local level. This is what's happening. And here's what one side's saying. Here's the other side. Like, try to have it AB. And then just on the app, you can vote. Just right away, get the information you need and vote. So I'd say most people look at me like I'm crazy when I say online voting's coming. They definitely did like a year ago. But now that they realize, uh-oh, it's going to be hard to physically vote, now they can see it a little better.
Well, awesome. Well, Eric, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for your book. And I can't wait to hear what the next focus project is.
No, thank you. It's good seeing you. And hopefully we'll be able to see each other physically soon as well.
Okay. I'll talk to you soon. Thank you so much.
No, thank you.
If you're inspired by today's show and you're the kind of person who likes to help others, there are some easy ways that you can help me. First, please subscribe to the Wealthy Wealthy podcast. By doing so, it helps both of us. You'll never miss an episode, and it helps me and my ratings. And if you're able to leave a review, hopefully 5 stars, even better. Finally, if you think your friends and family would enjoy the show, I invite you to share the Wealthy Wealthy podcast with everyone you know. If you have any questions, I'm here. You can email me at support@wealthywealthy.com, and I may even use your question or suggestion for a future podcast episode. Also, if you want to be motivated and inspired more regularly, connect with me on Instagram or LinkedIn at Christina Wise. That's KristinaWise. I believe we are all on this journey together towards finding our sovereignty and freedom. And I'd love to be part of your journey. I'd love to help you, and especially on the financial side. So learn more at sovereigntyacademy.com. As always, thank you so much for listening and being part of the Wealthy Wealthy community.